Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is James Callan. James, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited. Even though that sounded sarcastic, it is absolutely genuine. So how might people know you, James?
People might know me from Twitter, where I am at @scarequotes. My day job and stuff that I kind of tweet about, I am a user experience designer and content strategist in Seattle. I work for Sur La Table, the kitchen store website. And the other thing that I do somewhat on Twitter, fairly known for, is stuff related to trivia, quiz nights, sort of thing, because that's one of my own little geekdom things is trivia nights. So,
Quizzo, is that a thing? I played Quizzo. Is that the same as trivia nights, or is that different?
Now that you say that, I've heard of Quizzo. I have not played Quizzo, so it is not exactly the same. I tend to go for the classic, like there is a physical host in the room mm-hmm. who reads out questions and teams write down answers and drink beer, or in my case, cider, and, you know, eat unhealthy pub food and do it that way. That to me is kind of the most fun, but I do like a lot of trivia games and stuff like that. I like Quiz Up is pretty good when, what was the one? There was one that was a really good app thing a couple of years ago that sadly went defunct. But,
I don't know. Well, actually, yeah. So I don't know if this is an East Coast thing, but Quizzo is a thing where you go to a pub and it's basically a trivia night. There's a host. You have teams. You get a little piece of paper. He or she asks you questions. So I don't know if that's an East Coast, West Coast thing. We've already got – it's like a rivalry here.
Yeah, there are – I know that there are regional – like there are a few regional players in the pub quiz market. Like I have heard of Big Quiz Thing out here. It's Geeks Who Drink is really popular. They started in like Arizona or New Mexico, but they're pretty West Coast, Midwest at this point. So yes, now that you say that, that is probably where I've heard Quizzo from. I've not done them specifically, but that is the kind of thing that I do.
I used to be a host, like write
and do the questions. So that's me. I really like being the guy who knows stuff and asking other people and not as, I mean, it's fun to go and play, but it's really fun to like go test a bunch of drunk strangers.
And be the quiz master.
Exactly.
Satisfy your inner Alex Trebek.
Yeah, kind of. It's that way. I'm not as persnickety, but yes.
Oh, well, that's right. So let's talk about Star Trek.
Let's do.
Which probably comes up in many quiz nights and trivia nights across the nation.
There does seem to be a big overlap in trivia fans and Star Trek fans.
I would not be surprised. Star Trek fans seem to like the details. And the episode we watched tonight, which is The Sword of Kaelas, Deep Space Nine, has some – well, it mentions a lot of Klingon mythology kind of stuff. But we'll get to that. But before we get to that, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I am a fan, but I'm a fairly casual fan. When I was younger, like back, you know, in the early teens, which was, you know, the early 80s, I was definitely much more a Star Wars kind of kid and did not see Star Trek on TV. And especially earlier was like, oh, Star Trek, I don't care. And then at some point later adolescence, it was like, I saw a few, original series episodes and started to kind of get it. And I have to confess, because I know, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but the episode that I really liked that got me into Star Trek is the one where it starts out with Abraham Lincoln floating in space in front of the ship. And I know, I realize now that this is a terrible episode, but when I was 15 or whatever it was like the best concept. So, so I've seen some original series. I think the height of my fandom was in college, which I think is true for a lot of people. And that was around the time of Next Generation. So I saw a lot of the mid-year Next Generation things because a lot of people I lived with were fans. And I had misremembered because I went and looked this back up. For some reason, I thought that the Next Generation ended about the time that I left college, but actually left. I graduated in 92 and it ended in 94. So I was clearly watching the show later than college. And then I know that I saw some of the early Deep Space Nine and even I think some Voyager episodes, but neither one of those took hold. And then I've never seen an Enterprise episode, so that is clearly where it TV wise my fandom peters out. But then also I've seen not all of the movies. Like, I have not seen Star Trek V because nobody says good things about it.
You could skip Star Trek V.
Yeah, that's so I hear. I like most of – I like the good ones. So, like, First Contact I think is great. Star Trek Wrath of Khan, obviously great. Mm-hmm. I even like the reboots, although – and I'm probably in the prime position to enjoy a lot of what they did without getting too hung up on the fact that it threw a lot of stuff out that was cool.
That's true. Those movies have angered some Star Trek fans.
Yes, and I understand why. I mean, like, if I had been a giant obsessive, I could see where the changes would be really, really annoying.
Yes, although I think, speaking for myself, that it was very clever because it basically preserves both universes because it's an alternate reality, right? So everything that happens at a certain point, it diverges, and then we have all the original Star Trek stuff still exists, and now we have new Star Trek stuff that we can let.
Right, yeah. And at some point, at some point it's like, what are you going to do? Because you either have to recast the characters and just go with it or do something else. So it was a bold move.
It was a bold move. And I am just thankful that there's new Star Trek. Although I am hopeful there will be a new Star Trek TV series because I think Star Trek works best as a TV series. But I do not make these decisions, so I cannot make that happen. So you are a casual fan. Are you so casual that you do not have a favorite series?
No, I mean, based mostly on what I'm a Next Generation guy. Mm-hmm. And part of that's because that is the one I have seen the most episodes of. I do like the original series. I remember liking Deep Space Nine, what I saw of it, which was, probably the episodes from within the first couple of years. I did not get hooked on Voyager early, and then Enterprise, by that time, I was, again, not a completist, and nobody had good things to say about it, so I never bothered even trying to get into that. So, but as a favorite, it's definitely Next Generation. I'm a Picard guy.
I was going to ask Kirk or Picard, since you have original series versus TNG basically in your background.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Picard. I think Kirk is great, but Picard to me is like the consummate captain.
That's true. And just today, this episode will be posted next week, but pulled from the headlines, Ted Cruz, Republican what is he doing? He's running candidate. That's the word. For president. He's not the nominee yet. He may be. Good luck to Ted Cruz. But the only reason I mentioned Ted Cruz is because was in an interview, and the reporter asked him, if you could have a reporter ask you any question, what would you ask yourself? I think they framed it much better than that. And he said he wanted to talk about Star Trek. And so he started talking about Kirk versus Picard. I found it very amusing.
Wasn't he saying, I did not read the whole interview, but didn't he say something like Kirk is the whole captain? And then like Picard is like half a captain Picard is like the cerebral side, but Riker is the emotional side. So he prefers Kirk because he combines both of those.
Yes, which, I am all for politicians being Star Trek fans. I disagree with his theory because I think he forgets about Spock.
Yes, that did seem to be a flaw there.
But I like Kirk. I like Picard as well. I think if I had to pick between the two, I would pick Picard as my captain. I wouldn't want to serve on a starship, Star Trek terminology, where Captain Kirk did, because he just seems like he doesn't think things through, and he gets away with a lot of stuff because he has a gumption, and he's pretty lucky. And he's surrounded by highly competent people. But
and his red shirts do not get away with a lot of stuff is the problem.
That is true. And I would definitely be a red shirt, so I would be dead.
Yes.
I feel like on the Enterprise-D with Captain Picard, I would just be probably in like astrometrics or something, and I wouldn't have to go on any away team missions. I'd be fine. I wouldn't talk to the captain because he doesn't like to talk to people. I would, just stay quiet in the turbo lift if he happened to come upon when I was like Steve Jobs. If there's a famous story of when Steve Jobs was in the elevator at Apple and you were there, you didn't want to make eye contact, you didn't want to talk to him, because he would ask you, like, what do you do, and make yourself explain yourself. And I feel like that's the same thing that happens with if Picard walks into the turbo lift. You don't want to make eye contact, you don't want to talk to him, you're just like, please don't notice me.
I do plenty, it's good, I am good at my job. Thank you, sir. Yes.
I have to get off here.
Please don't beat me down.
That's right. But okay, so enough of my strange analogies and Ted Cruz anecdotes. Let's talk about the Sword of Kaelas.
And I have to admit that actually, when you sent me the episode title, I did not, this is how casual I was. I had no idea if it was, I assumed it was Kaelas from the spelling. And then, like, watching the episode, I was like, I'm going to say this wrong because I had read the word enough that it was in my head as Kaelas, but I think I think it's Kaelas now.
It is Kaelas.
Yes. I mean, in my head, I think I will probably successfully pronounce it the whole time.
Excellent. Well, there is an episode of Random Trek where I consistently called Chakotay, the first officer of Voyager, Chipotle. So, you know, mispronouncing Kaelas, I think, is a far less egregious error, so... Kaelas the Unforgettable, apparently.
Yes.
So this is, if you couldn't tell by the title, and if you don't know who Kaelas is, you wouldn't be able to tell by the title, although the word sword could be a tip-off.
Yes.
Klingon episode. This is a Klingon-y episode. The main characters of our Deep Space Nine standard characters that stand out in this episode are Worf, of course, because he's a Klingon, and Dax. Because she is a blood brother to Kor, who, interestingly enough, this is the second Deep Space Nine episode in which Kor appears. The third, maybe fourth, episode of Star Trek that he appears in, because Kor, as trivia-minded Star Trek fans know, also appeared in an original series episode, Errand of Mercy, which we talked about on this very podcast several, many episodes ago. The same actor, the same character. So that's a nice little touch. He has apparently, we knew from the Albino was the episode that Kor appeared in Deep Space Nine before, where he had to go and help two other Klingons get their blood vengeance against the Albino. Find out that Kor is kind of, I wouldn't say he's hit rock bottom, but he's past his prime. He enjoys drinking a little too much blood wine. But he is highly respected amongst Klingons because he's a Dahar master.
That was one of the things. When you sent me the episode title, I wanted to just watch it. Mm-hmm. So I did a little bit of like, what is this episode? And the few things I saw were like, it's the one where Worf gets introduced to, I mean, that he'd been on Deep Space Nine, but it's the one where it's the first one that they wrote, apparently, knowing that he was going to be a permanent cast member. So they kind of were like, let's make it all Worf. The other thing was like, it's the Raiders of the Lost Ark episode. And I was like, oh, well, that's good, because I was a big Raiders fan. Like, you know, even more than Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark was my bag. So I was very excited. But yes, is it Dahar? I thought it was Daha, which tells you how much I looked it up. But I was like, is this a martial art? But apparently it's just an honorific of some sort.
Yes, he's a legendary warrior. And so he earned the title of Dahar Master, which is why in the beginning of this episode, Worf is kind of shy around him, doesn't want Dax to introduce him to Kor because he thinks, so Worf's family has been dishonored. And so he doesn't want to talk to Kor because he figures Kor doesn't want to talk to a dishonored Klingon. Dax assures him that Kor is not like other Klingons, which leads us to a fun little scene where she introduces Worf to Kor, and Kor is like, oh, the traitor, the lowest of the low, and then he smiles and does his big kind of hammy laugh, and everything is right in the world.
Yeah.
And
any enemy of Gowron and the High Council is a friend of mine. That's yes. Right. Which I do have to say, I kind of saw that coming from the buildup, and also I figured that Kor was going to be a big thing in the episode, even though I did not know him before. But I was like, they have to have some relationship going in. One thing I thought was really interesting about that opening scene, because, you know, to your earlier point, this really does focus mostly on Worf and Dax. Mm-hmm. And there are token appearances from several of the other main characters. But they do their best to, like, Quark is the Ferengi name, right?
Yes.
Armin Shimmerman, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I keep wanting to call him Principal Skinner. Principal the principal from Buffy, but which is where I knew him from Deep Space Nine, but I was a big Buffy fan. So that's my true fandom.
I don't think I've seen any episodes of Buffy.
There you go. So sometime we'll have to do random Buffy, and you can be the Lex who has never seen one.
That's right. But I will have no idea what's going on. I'll be like, is that Quark as the principal? Yes. I had no idea he was even in that.
Yeah, he plays, he has a recurring role as a principal. But anyway, I just love that, like, he has one line, and it's basically pointing out, making sure for the newbies in the audience that Klingons are bloodthirsty and that Ferengi like money. Because it's like, you know, these stories are all this, and then nobody makes any profit. And you're like, clearly, we have established your species character in one line.
That's right. And he establishes the Klingon species character in one
line. Yes, exactly.
It's very economical. And that episode, in that scene, they you know, Quark has a line, Kira has a line, O'Brien has a line, Bashir right. has a line, and Odo has a line, and then we never see any of them again.
Yes, exactly. And then you get a little bit later, you get Avery Brooks, Captain Sisko, and it's like he gets about two lines, and that's it.
Although he's chafing with a weird little boxy thing, which I thought was interesting. It's Sisko and his – I don't even know yes. why he's shaving. But I wrote a couple of notes, and that was one of my notes, so I have to mention it.
I did also notice – I mean, and again, this is what tipped me off that Kor was some – had at least some history, is that he does – no, it's Worf that mentions Kirk, isn't it? Like mm-hmm. he's yes. – and when he's talking to Kor, he's like, oh, yeah, and you had that throwdown with Kirk or whatever. And it's like, oh, apparently he – either – I was like, either they're just filling that in as backstory, and it – but it turned out that he was actually in an episode, so.
Yes, no, this is a – his character has a rich history in that he's been in one original series episode.
and the animated series is my later understanding, because being the trivia nerd – this is after I watched the episode, especially, it was like, so Kor, look this up. Oh, yes. You can get on a big rat hole in the Star Trek wiki, but
you can spend hours reading about Kor.
Yes, you can.
And Klingon culture in general. So this episode is obviously it's a Klingon episode. This is heavy on kind of Klingon politics and infighting and a little bit of Klingon mythology. And there's a dash of Klingon fighting, which is not very exciting in this episode, only because it's so dark. I couldn't see anything that was happening with the fights.
For such a warrior centric, species, I guess. I don't know, culture. The fights were strangely bloodless, especially with, you know, this Botleth that looks wicked, but you know, people get killed and there's no blood.
Right. They try to knock each other out yes. as opposed to stabbing each other through the head, which is what you think they would do with such a weapon.
Would think. That save that for the movies, I guess. But
I'm not a Dahar master, so I don't understand how to use a Batleth. So this episode, yeah, the title gives it away, right? So Kor is looking for the sword of Kaelas, which is actually a Batleth, but I suppose the Batleth of Kaelas would have been too on the nose for the title. I don't know. Or people would be like, what the hell is a Batleth?
People reading TV Guide back in 1996 or whatever it was. What is that? Yeah.
But that would be – it would intrigue them, and they'd be like, I must learn of this Batleth. Or maybe not. And so Kor decides – Kor's not great at keeping a secret, we also learn in this episode.
No, apparently not.
Because he has, through some machinations, figured out where the Sword of Kaelas is, which has been lost for 1,000 years. It was stolen by these invaders from the Klingon homeworld, which I don't think we've ever heard of before, except for this episode.
The Herc.
The Herc, yes.
Yes.
I could be wrong about that, but this is the first time I remember hearing about the Herc. So apparently the Herc invaded the Klingon homeworld, they took a bunch of stuff, and then they left. And included in their spoils of war was the Sword of Kaelas. Kaelas being the legendary founder of the Klingon Empire. And a wonderful warrior who one assumes has entered into Stolpelkor, which is Klingon heaven. But only warriors go there.
And also a gifted designer of Batleth, because doesn't he invent this whole thing?
I think he did, in fact, yes, okay. Invent the Batleth. And we learn in the episode that he did many things with his Batleth. He carved a statue with his Batleth, which seems like bad form for a warrior, because it seems like it would really do a number on your weapon.
That's going to dull that right on up.
Exactly. But I guess maybe he kept it super sharp. I don't know. He skinned a giant snake, apparently. He did a lot of stuff with his Batleth. And people, the Klingons are crazy about Kalas, and of course, being a warrior culture, they're crazy about weapons, and so the weapon of Kalas is super important. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of what it would be like in our culture. Probably like, you know, for Masons, like George Washington's Masonic apron or something like that would probably be similar. I guess, I don't know. I'm not a Mason.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I thought it was interesting, and, you know, since I had been sort of primed to think of it as the Raiders episode, mm-hmm. it reminded me a little bit. I mean, their quest is not nearly as involved as any of Indiana Jones' things. Like, they kind of just go to where it is, beam down, and like, hey, we found it. You know, there's a barrier. There's a couple of puzzles that they have to solve, but those are dispatched fairly quickly. But it did make me wonder about, you know, like the sense of awe was kind of like, well, it was very awesome, but then they're really, really quick to just grab it. And I was kind of thinking about, you know, if somebody found Excalibur or something, I don't know, Klingon archaeologists must be a much more headstrong lot than, you know, like than on Earth, where, you know, like we would be looking at that and digging it out and excavating. It wasn't really buried, but examining it for days before anybody could touch it. And they're just like, nope, let's fight.
Let's get this thing. Yeah, I feel like I have many questions about how the Klingon Empire functions, because almost every Klingon we meet are warriors.
Right.
And they're very headstrong, and they like to solve all their problems by basically beating up each other. And that makes you wonder how they could have had a star empire by coming, you know, how could they come together and then conquer a bunch of other planets when they can't even agree amongst each other?
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, what they reminded me of, and this is not a new observation, I'm sure, but they're clearly sort of modeled on Mongols, mm-hmm. like the Mongol Genghis Khan and the Mongol Empire, and maybe some kind of combination of that and the Roman Empire, since they've got this thing that's lasted 1,000 years. But because you even have stuff like the blood wine, which reminded me of the, you know, how the Mongols famously drank like the blood of their mares mm-hmm. for sustenance going off. But the big difference is that, you know, the Mongols did not have, I mean, there was obviously some infighting, but they were not dedicated to trying to like knock each other off their thrones. So
yes, yeah, there are many houses in the Klingon Empire. So it's organized in houses.
Yes.
And we find out the House Duras, which is responsible for... So there's a lot of backstory. Worf's father, Moog, was improperly branded...
Inventor of the synthesizer.
Yes, famous for his synthesizer, also a great warrior, was framed by the House of Duras to be a traitor, and but it turns out that he wasn't a traitor, so all of Worf's life he was kind of an outcast, and he thought his father was a traitor, and his house was in great shame, but then through a number of things, and I think these are TNG episodes, it turns out that the Duras family... whose most famous members, I believe, are Lursa and Dursa, the sisters.
I do remember those, because I know I saw some of these episodes, at least, on TNG. But it was really stretching my memory. I was like, I remember the name Gowron. I have no idea what the backstory is, really. But
Gowron has crazy eyes.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know about Gowron. And so, long story short, the Duras family framed Worf. Well, not Worf, but his family. Gowron found out. Worf decided that he didn't want to trouble the Empire even more by taking his vengeance, but so they kind of kept it on the down low, but they exiled the House Duras. So House Duras really wants to get back in the good graces one of the members of House Duras wants to become Emperor himself, and he thinks if he gets the Sword of Kalas, everyone will suddenly decide he should be the Emperor.
Of course. That's how archaeology works. You find the right relic and...
It reminded me of Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail. With, you know, the Lady of the Lake handing out swords is no basis for a government. anybody who holds the sword of Kaelas will become emperor. But yeah, so the whole point of this episode, I thought it was interesting that someone called it the Raiders episode, because as I was watching this, I thought, you know, they build up the sword of Kaelas and it's been missing for 1,000 years. And so you think, well, this is going to be tough to find.
Yeah.
And it's really not that tough.
No, some Vulcans found it. We're going to beam down. We're going to reverse the polarity on a shield, which I appreciated the reversing the polarity being the thing that the key. And then we will take some old DNA and pretend that we are Herc and get past the last sensor. And then it's like, oh, and there it is.
And it takes them. So my thought was, you know, Vulcans are fairly thorough as a race. And they are highly logical, and it takes Dax about, so they beam down to this Herc underground bunker, I guess, where it's been ransacked, all the artifacts are gone, so they think, oh no, the Sword of Kaelas is gone, so sad. But then 2 seconds later, they say, oh, here's a force field that we didn't notice. And my thought is, wouldn't the Vulcan archaeologists who mapped out this entire place and like analyzed it, wouldn't they have noticed this?
You would think so, because the big reveal is that Worf literally, I think, in 5 seconds notices that there's a spot on the floor where there's no dust. And it's not even close to the thing. It's like it's across the room, and he has gone across the room and noticed there's no dust here. I was like, he's a master of the details at that point, because
Worf is highly detail oriented. Yes. And so, yeah, and then Dax is like, oh, that means there's a force field. Let me use my tricorder and take it down by reversing polarity. And then they're like, oh, no, there's the sensor. Let's pretend we're Herc. Yeah. And then it's done. And then they're in. And what's in that other room? The thing they were looking for.
Of course. The Sword of Kaelas.
Sword of Kaelas. It's right there, looking quite nice for a 1,000-year-old sword.
It does. It's in very good shape for something that's that old.
Well-preserved. But there's this nice moment and a nice shot of Kor and Worf looking at it. And Worf, you know, it's obvious because this is a hugely significant object in their culture.
Right.
This is like you said, this would be like if we found Excalibur, or if you found like a copy of the Declaration of Independence in a frame in your house. Like, this is a big deal. So they're both clearly like, I want to touch this immediately. But Worf defers to Kor, and he says, no, Kor, you should, because you're a Dahar master, you should take up the Sword of Kaelas first. And so Kor does. And he says, oh, it feels really good. And then Worf gets a turn with it.
Of course, yeah.
Because you have to. It's right there. I mean, come on. It reminds me of every time I'm in a museum, I just want to touch stuff. I don't.
Yeah, no, you don't want to. You don't want to actually do that. But no, yes,
but I have that.
The temptation is always there.
Impulse of like, ooh, I should touch this thing, or like the Liberty Bell. I live in Philadelphia. You go to the Liberty Bell. It's really easy to touch it. You're not supposed to. They have a park ranger there who frowns at you if you try to touch it. But I really want to touch it, but I don't. But they do. They touch the Sword of Kaelas, as you said. They have no qualms. They don't put gloves on. They don't do anything. They just pick it up and off they go. this happens like the first 10 minutes maybe of the episode.
Yeah, it's really quick. Although actually I have to say, I was surprised, rewinding just a little bit, I was actually surprised when I was watching it how long it took to get to the opening credits. Because it's like 7.5 minutes, and I sort of assumed at some point that Netflix had just trimmed it off, and I was like, and then it finally kicked in after that whole opening scene, and Kor is attacked by the thing that reads his mind that shows up again here. But then after that, it's like, talk to Sisko, get a ship, beam down. I think it's another 5 minutes after that that, you know, and we found the sword.
And there's
we are
the sword.
Good to go.
And just as they are like, okay, let's go. We've accomplished our mission. This is our destiny. Their core is very kind of operatic. The Klingons are an operatic, dramatic race.
They are.
And he thinks this is a giant quest, and this will give them great glory. And Kor's thing is, well, before he gets the Batleth, he thinks, they will build a statue to me because I found this thing. After he gets the sword, his priorities change a little bit, but... We can talk about that rather quickly, actually. But they have it. They're like, great. You know, we're 15 minutes into the episode. The episode is over because they found what they want and they're going to leave. But no, the alien that James, you just mentioned, that I neglected to mention, who read Ambushed Core and read his thoughts, shows up again. And who's with him? Some guy, Terrell?
And I did not write the name down. And I don't know,
some
remember,
Klingon,
but
from,
yes,
House Duras.
And it was, is that, that's Klingon is the one that Worf actually spared, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So Worf had the option to have him, I think he, Worf probably would have, the option is that Worf would in fact kill him as opposed
right.
to him being executed somewhere else, because that's the way Klingons roll. But Worf decided to spare him because he did no wrong. His house, or his father or somebody was responsible. He was kind of his representative of the house, and Worf was like, well, you didn't do it, so I'm going to let you live. And when he explains this to Kor is like, you're no Klingon. Everything they said about you is true. You're a horrible person, and you are not right to even touch the Sword of Kaelas.
Yes. It was not long after that that I figured out that they, rather than, I mean, like I could see sort of where people would say Raiders, but then the other classic touchstone is Treasure of the Sierra Madre, where it's like mm-hmm. they go out, they get their thing, and then I actually appreciated that Dax was not affected by this, but the two Klingons immediately, it's like, we are going to fall out and be mutually distrustful of each other and both accuse each other of really wanting the sword, not just for the sword, but because we want to take over the Empire. And of course, now that they have the idea, they both do think that it would be a great idea to be the Emperor.
That's true, because they found the Sword of Kaelas, and as we know, that's all that matters.
That is all that matters.
And that makes you eminently qualified to be the emperor of a gigantic multi-star system empire.
Yes, a sword. Yes. Although we also get the Klingon jamming signal that means that the second 2/3 of the episode have to take longer than the opening beam down and get in, because now they cannot just beam out. So that turns it into the more or less the quest where they get to turn on each other.
Yes, and they have to – so they have this very dark fight scene between Duras, who brought like two dudes and this mind-reading alien with him. And I thought, really?
Yeah.
You should bring more people with you.
You would think so.
I mean, there are only
three
of them.
You really want this sword. Just go for some overkill.
Exactly. Yeah. There are only three of them, but one of them is a Dahar master. But Duras, they are quickly dispatched. And then, well, they're not dispatched. They are incapacitated, not killed.
Is this where Worf is wounded? I can't remember.
Yes, Worf is stuck with a dagger.
It's a very conveniently on-again, off-again wound that inconveniences him at exactly the right times, and then is of no consequence at the other times.
Exactly. And then they must run away because of the Klingon jamming signal. They can't beam out, so they have to run and hide in the tunnels and try to figure out a way to get out. Oh, and they have they reactivate a force field so that the other,
yes,
so they have some time between when the Duras people can follow them.
I did like that bit where Kor was very excited, like, and hoped that the guy that he killed was like, it was as if he understood the honor of being the first man killed in 1,000 years by the Sword of Kaelas. And it's like that is a great Klingon moment there, I have to say, because there's, yes, there's part of me that suspects he probably was sort of honored. You know, if he had to die, that is the way to go.
Well, it's true. It's probably a high honor in the Klingon culture to die by the Sword of Kaelas. Only it would higher if Kaelas himself had done it.
Yes, exactly.
But Kaelas is dead. So, but the Emperor is a clone of Kaelas. So,
that was like the most not being up on the mythology when they just kind of offhandedly go, "Well, he's a clone." I was like, "What?" that was the literal like, okay, that has you've transcended my easily. I can just roll with a lot of this backstory. And it was like, oh, he's a clone grown in a vat? And I was like, what? The Klingon Empire Emperor is a clone? And then I actually at first assumed that it was kind of a metaphor, but clearly it was not. So,
no, he's actually a clone. I believe, yes, the Klingon, the Emperor is a highly kind of ceremonial office. Gowron is the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire. And I believe he's much like, you know, he's the Prime Minister. And the Emperor is the Queen of England, if we were, you know, to talk about things. But I think that the hope is with the Sword of Kaelas, the Emperor would once again retain his emperorly powers, or whoever becomes the Emperor, and rule the Klingon Empire as it was meant to be. No more of this Chancellor and vague democracy.
Right. Yeah. Enough of that. Too much contact with the Federation, clearly.
That's right. It's no good. And as we were saying, Treasure of Sierra Madre, as soon as they get away from the danger, Kor and Worf basically turn on each other. They both want the Sword of Kaelas. Kor thinks that it was his destiny to find it and become the Emperor. And he's a Dahar Master, so who better to be the Emperor? Worf tells Dax about this dream he had, how he always felt like he was an outsider. He was raised by humans, so he went back to the Klingon homeworld. His cousins didn't want to talk to him because he was raised by humans, so he ran off to the woods on a little vision quest, an inadvertent vision quest, because he went without food or water for 3 days. And then he had a vision where Kaelas told him that it was his destiny to find the sword and become emperor.
I like that this whole thing starts with them actually squabbling about the sword itself, because you have Kor making fun of Worf for wanting to treat it like a museum piece.
Yes.
And then you have Worf being mad at Kor because he's using it to shovel food into his mouth. and it's a great, that is actually a great little moment that illuminates their two characters. I mean, because Kor, of course, is just going to use it to like shovel food in his mouth. He's, you know, obviously kind of a sensualist.
Yes.
And, you know, drink and eat and kill and whatever else. It's all great. And that's what the sword was for. And Worf, obviously, you know, as we would have known if you've seen him before, a much more reserved and, you know, more, human traditional. It's a relic and it's a museum piece and it's something to be, you know, even though we'll grab it right away and kill people with it, we should, you know, minimize the amount of stuff that we're doing with this thing at this point.
Well, it was designed to kill people, so I think Worf is okay with using it as a weapon, but he draws the line at using it as a fork.
Yeah.
Even though this is where we find out that Kaelas himself had many unorthodox uses for his bat'leth.
Yes. Skinning snakes, whatever else.
You know,
yeah.
Just sculpture, as you do. And this is, I think you pointed this out before, but Dax plays the counterpoint in that she sees what's going on, and it happens very quickly. They turn on each other very quickly. And Dax is basically having none of it. She's like, you guys, we are stuck here. We're going to die. You're fighting over this stupid sword. I'm going to take the sword. I don't want to be emperor. I'm just going to hold on to it until we get out of here. And then you can figure it out.
Yeah, I was actually a little worried that they were going to have her also fall into the, like, you know, I can have the sword. But no, clearly just fairly no nonsense at that point.
She was annoyed because they wouldn't go to sleep. So she was,
they're going to glare at each other all night.
That's right. And apparently they do for like 4 hours. They glare at each other.
The other thing is that this was the episode, and obviously I knew what Klingons were and stuff, but this was the episode where when Kor and Worf really start getting into, you know, like, you're too much like a human, or you're too drunk on blood wine and whatever else, where to me it started going, oh, Klingons are much more, this is the episode that made Klingons interesting to me. Not that they were, I mean, I've always liked them, but I never really got the whole cultural obsession with, like, let's learn the language or let's dress up, you know, like Klingons, as opposed to some of the other things out there. But this is the one where it was like, oh, it's not just that they're warriors. There are nuances in this culture. They're not, you know, fully addressed, but there are, you know, within the range of combative, you know, ready to fight, honor-driven people, it's like there are different tacks to take, where Worf is the one who's willing to spare someone who didn't do anything, and Kor is the one who, you know, is against the Chancellor Gowron, but is also, you know, the traditional, like, no, you should have killed that dude. That's just the way it's, you know, and it's weak of you not to have done that. So, and it actually, to me, was kind of an interesting, oh, I get, you know, they've developed the culture more than just being, you know, brutal warriors.
Yes, and they do a lot of that in Deep Space Nine. Has a lot of Klingon stuff, especially in later seasons, because, you know, Worf is
right.
The main character, and he joins the cast, and the war with the Dominion, the Klingons come in, there's Cardassia is invaded, all kinds of stuff happens. But they certainly do flesh out Klingons. Klingon's still kind of one note, but there are degrees of that note.
Yeah, and this is not to say that I became a giant Klingon fan or anything, but it was more like, oh, okay, they've done a little bit more with them than just, you know, they're hostile
and they like opera.
Yes.
And I do like Kor. I think the pairing of Kor and Worf in this episode. They play off each other very well. The actors really heighten the kind of the different personalities that they have. And it is clear that, you know, Worf is intimidated by Kor and all the stories he's heard of Kor. But then he hears Kor telling these stories in Quarks, and he realizes very quickly that perhaps Kor embellishes slightly.
Maybe a little bit, yes. When that little rat that they catch for dinner is going to be 6 feet long or whatever it is, he's well onto that story by now.
Yes, and then he's offended. He's like, a true warrior needs not embellish his accomplishments. And Kor is like, well, you better hope they embellish it when they tell the song of this, or else it'll be Kor found the Sword of Kaelas and Worf was there.
Yes.
Which I thought was a great rejoinder.
That was a great line.
And so the episode ends with the Klingon, I forget even how they disrupt the jamming thing, but they do, and they get out. They realize that the Klingon Empire is not ready for the Sword of Kaelas to be rediscovered. Because if two Klingons, or I guess really three Klingons, because there's the Duras guy,
right,
can't, you know, be in awe and know what to do with the Sword of Kaelas, imagine what billions of Klingons, what will happen when billions of Klingons want to get it. And so they come up with an unorthodox solution to this problem.
We can't handle it, so we will beam it into space. I liked it where Kor is like, oh, it could be lost for another 1,000 years. And I was like, I think if that's just floating in space, that is a conservative estimate for when that's going to turn up again.
Nope, it's just floating in space somewhere. No one knows where it is. I liked the ending shot is the sword kind of tumbling in space. And that looked cool. But I did think it was just a weird... Why not just give it to Dax and say, hey, Dax, just keep this.
Although apparently even Dax thinks that this is the thing to do with the sword, which was part of it seemed very clearly we're running out of time. We have to wrap this up. So
let's just get rid of the sword.
What can we do? Beam it out. Not just even leave it on the planet, but it's like, nope, it's got to come out.
Well, the guy, the Duras guy knew it was at that planet, so they can't leave it there.
I guess they have to put it somewhere that he doesn't know, but you know, not give it to Sisko, not hide it somewhere, I don't know.
Yeah,
seems like there were options.
You would think that there, but you know, the Klingons are a very straightforward kind of aliens. So they see a simple problem and they have a simple solution. Just chuck it out in airlock, although they beam it into space, which is slightly more elegant, I suppose. And that's the end of this. So what did you think of this episode? Not having a deep rooting in the Klingon mythos.
I liked it. It was, and like you said, like we talked about, it's surprising how quickly the primary thing that gets set up actually gets resolved. It's like, oh, we're going on a quest for the Sword of Kaelas, and it's like the shortest quest ever. Because it's basically like through a wormhole, through a thing, and we found it, and we're done. But then I liked I mean, to me, the most interesting parts were kind of the bickering between Kor and Worf and, you know, their personalities and their philosophy on what a Klingon is and all that stuff. That was really good. I also really liked, you know, once you get to that part where there's the ledge and, you know, Worf is holding on to him and to Kor, that at the end of that, it's not, you know, like, yes, there was a ledge, but Dax points out that it was not enough of a ledge. So Worf was not, it's not like Worf was the innocent in this, even though he's the main character. Like, he may not have explicitly wished for him to die, but he was clearly fine with that idea.
Right. And Worf's explanation was, he's an old man. I didn't make him slip. If he died, if that ledge didn't hold him up, it was his own fault because he slipped by himself.
Yes, exactly. So I appreciate that they really went and like they made him sort of dark. It wasn't just, you know, oh, it was explained away by a magic spell or whatever. No, it was like, you know, Worf has these depths of, you know, bloodthirstiness or at least callousness that, you know, you might not otherwise see because, you know, he's a heroic character ultimately.
And I did like the fact that it wasn't like the Sword of Kaelas didn't have some this is exactly what you just said, didn't have some kind of like weird field that caused everybody to go crazy. It was just the cultural significance of it just overwhelmed them. And then they thought, I can be the ruler if I have this. So why not me?
I think I wikied several things. I actually was surprised. Apparently some people were annoyed that the sword did not have magic. Like they assumed that was what was going on and they were disappointed that it was just a psychological explanation. So I was like, no, it's much better as a psychological explanation.
Yes, if it's because then there's no consequence to the characters, right? It's not their fault. So
right,
the sword made them do it, but no, it was their fault. Their darker side wanted the power, and it was too much. The temptation was too great, so you beam it into space.
Yes, somebody else needs to find that sucker.
That's right. We can't handle it. Well, James, thank you so much for joining me and discussing the Sword of Kaelas.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Next on Random Trek, Enterprise Season 2, Episode 5, A Night in Sickbay.